Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm very happy that you're joining us, that you're here with us. We've got some good stuff lined up for you. Straight ahead, as you know, Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. She is now in her ninth year as a member of our Brain Trust. And our good friend, Joan, welcome back.
Hey there, Jim. Thank you.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
As always.
Good to be back, as always.
Joan, it's cold in Washington, D.C., isn't it?
Boy, it couldn't be much colder, it
How
seems
cold
like.
How cold is it?
I think we're in the single digits right now, or we were overnight.
That's not even the wind chill.
Oh, that's right. Sure. I'm sure we're below zero on wind chill.
Wind chill is like Antarctica or something like that, right?
Yeah, you bet.
I mean, I heard penguins were coming ashore there at the Watergate.
I think they feel very at home here right now.
I heard penguins were coming ashore at the Watergate yesterday, and so...
And you don't mean men in tuxedos.
No, I don't mean that either. Exactly. And how much snow do you have? How much snow, ice, and sleet and accumulation do you
have? Well, it was several inches, but it doesn't look like several inches because so much of it was sleet. But we have a very weird weather pattern here. The Washington metropolitan area, half of it can get one thing and half of it can get another. And the whole eastern area had such bad ice that they've got downed power lines and a lot of people without power right
now. But look
now.
At all the snow that they're getting up north. The whole eastern half of the United States, at least.
Yeah, see, we didn't get the accumulated snow that they did, say, near Lake Ontario, where they got 12 feet. And I guess now...
But you got the temperature.
Right.
And what's happening in... The point I'm trying to get to here, Joan, is yesterday, and I think for at least the second time, the global warming debate was postponed in Washington because it was too cold.
Right.
Do you think any of the global warming whack jobs saw any irony in that yesterday?
I don't know. I mean, I think a cold winter is actually pretty normal. I don't think it's abnormal.
But what I
don't know.
I completely.
I mean,
agree.
I think what worries me more than hot or cold is the volatility of the weather.
But I also heard that they weren't able to show in one of the colleges there locally, they weren't able to show Al Gore's movie because people couldn't get in because it was just too cold.
Well, I mean, they can think that gives you an argument against global warming,
it
but
does
they've
give
got
me an
their
argument.
Heads
it's,
in the sand.
It's beautiful. It's perfect.
Spoken like an anti-global warming person.
Oh yes. Oh no. Yeah. No, I believe there is global warming, Joan. I'm absolutely 100% firmly in the camp that there is global warming is a reality.
But
10,000 years ago, Kentucky was under 5,000 feet of ice.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, global warming is real. It's been happening.
But you don't believe that humans have anything to do with it.
No, I didn't say that either.
Okay.
I do believe humans are probably contributing to global warming. I said contributing, not the cause of.
Okay.
Human beings are not the cause of global warming. This is a long-term trend that many scientists are pointing out. But I do think it's quite possible, it's absolutely likely that human beings are contributing to global warming. Where I have a problem are people who want us to throw the baby out with the bathwater and cripple our economies because of it. That's where I've got a problem.
Okay.
Which is basically what the Kyoto Accords are. But anyway, it's so funny to me. When we had those, remember when we had those 2 weeks of warm weather back in the early January?
Yes. It was
unseasonably warm.
Yes, I missed those weeks.
The global warming whack jobs came out of the woodwork and they were pointing their fingers, see. But, you know, I haven't heard any of those guys lately.
Well, if I was them, I'd be pointing fingers at the volatility of the weather. It's pretty freaky.
The volatility. So now it's volatility. Is that what it is, huh? Speaking of weather and things like that, Joan, is it possible that you could give us a cherry blossom update?
Well, as hard as it may be to believe, the Washington, D.C.'s annual cherry blossom parade is less than a month away. It's less than 2 months away. It's scheduled for April 14th.
Right.
And it has a new name this year. I bet you didn't know that.
I did not know that.
It's now called the Southwest Airlines Presents the Parade of the National Cherry Blossom Festival.
Oh,
that's what you have to call it.
That's grotesque.
And if you're going to make your plans for the Cherry Blossom Festival, it begins on March 31st.
Huh. The whole thing begins.
There's a week-long festival with all sorts of things that happen. But April 14th is the parade.
That's a Saturday.
Very good.
Well, I think you got a chance. But typically, hasn't that day been? Haven't you guys missed the parade? I mean the cherry blossoms.
Well, usually what happens is on a typical year, there's warm weather in March that causes the blossoms to come ahead a little too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And usually by the day of the parade, they're gone. And the parade usually is in the pouring rain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's all right. That's enough on that.
That's my cheerful update.
Joan, let's move over to some financial information. I know we're gonna talk about the letter in a second, but we have other news. Tell us who testified in front of the Senate, actually in front of Congress yesterday.
Right.
And who was there? Who was
the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Mr. Bernanke, giving his update on his views on the state of the economy.
Mr. Benjamin S. Bernanke.
Yes.
And he was there.
Well, he's Ben to me.
Oh, yes, right. He says you can call him Ben. Well, I actually have his speech in front of me, Joan.
Oh, wow.
And I have some, and I know you've read some things about it, and I think it's instructive and important for us to comment on a few of the things that he said, because I think it really underpins some of the things that you and I and Kiplinger we've been saying about the strength of this economy.
Right.
I want to read one little paragraph here. And, folks, this is word for word from Bernanke's speech yesterday. Quote, as we anticipated in the July report, the U.S. economy appears to be making a transition from the rapid rate of expansion experienced over the preceding several years to a more sustainable average pace of growth. End quote. Now, Joan, that means to me that the economy took a few years to recover from some downtime, to recover from the irrational exuberance of the 90s, and now we're settled into a pretty healthy situation. What do you think? That's what it sounds
like
to me. Right.
It's nice to hear him use that word sustainable. To me, that's the key word in the whole sentence.
A more sustainable average pace of growth.
Right.
Quoting again, the principal source of our ongoing moderation has been a substantial cooling in the housing market, which we all know about.
Right.
Which has led to a market slowdown in the pace of residential construction. And we're going to come back, that's end quote, folks. We're going to come back after these messages. A few more things to talk about with regard to what Mr. Bernanke said, which will impact how we do our planning for this year, ladies and gentlemen, in our small businesses. And then we're going to get into some of the things Kiplinger has to say about what's going on. 20 after. Joan Pryde is our guest. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's 23 after, one of Joan Pryde's favorite bands, right?
Sure.
One of your favorite groups there, Joan?
Sure. Whatever you say, Jim.
Joan Pryde,
I can't even name them.
Oh, man, it's funny. My website, folks, is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out. Don't forget to use all the archives and the articles to your advantage. Don't forget all the other things you can do there, including my newsletter. Subscribe to that. And new stuff coming at you real soon. Joan, I want to get back to my quoting some of the comments from Chairman Bernanke. These are comments that allow us, Joan, to peer into the thinking of the Fed, doesn't it?
Right.
And it tells, in my opinion, these kinds of things that he says. And I like the way he speaks. As much as I admired Greenspan, Bernanke speaks a little more plain English.
Boy, isn't that refreshing?
There probably won't ever be any Bernanke speak. There was Green speak, before, which was his cryptic way of saying things. Bernanke,
well, I think Volcker perfected it even before Greenspan.
Probably so. But here's another quote from Bernanke's speech to the Congress yesterday. Consumer spending has continued to expand at a solid rate, and the demand for labor has remained strong. On average, about 165 jobs per month have been added over the past 6 months, and the unemployment rate at 4.6% remains low. Now, John, I'm going to move over to another page and tie this in with something else he said. He says consumer outlays were supported by strong gains in personal income.
Okay.
Reflecting both the ongoing increases in payroll employment and a pickup in the growth of real wages.
Wow. That's good.
Now, Joan.
Yeah.
How can Congress sit there and hear this man talk about that and know that he's telling the truth and have all this empirical data in front of them and do two things? Number one, some of them go out and try to convince the world that that America workers are not keeping pace with the economy. This man just said that's not true. And how can they then raise minimum wage in the face of this evidence?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
I have no idea. Now, but did he differentiate at where what part of the salary spectrum these wage gains were coming?
He just said strong gains in personal income.
But your question presumes that the wage gains are coming at the lower end of the spectrum.
No, I'm saying that they're coming across the board.
But how do you know that?
Because I'm in the marketplace and I see what people are paying, and because I pay these people. I mean, I hire these people and I pay them, and I do business with vendors who hire people, and they charge me wages, fees, and I know what they pay their people.
Well, let me ask you this then: okay. How is it that these minimum wage bills appear? At least I could be wrong about this. Appear to be bipartisan and appear to have support from the president.
Because, but there are three. All right, I'll answer all three of those questions.
Okay.
There are three answers to that question. Number one, the Democrats do not understand how the economy works.
Okay.
And it's strictly 100% from the Democrat side. 100%. It's a sop to the unions. 100%. Totally political. Number two, the Republicans have no backbone. They know better. The Republicans know better. But they have no backbone. They're literally still deer's looking into the headlights from the election. They absolutely are running amok, the Republicans. And number three, Mr. Bush is working on his legacy. And that's the answer to your question.
But why would he want a higher minimum wage to be his legacy?
Because he's trying to. I don't know why. He's not going to veto it. I'm telling you. I had Steve Shabbat on the show. The ranking member of the Small Business Committee in the House. I had him, congressman from Ohio, on the show a couple of weeks ago. He said, "Jim, it's going to happen." I had Mike Inslee, Republican from Wyoming, on last week, Senator Inslee, and he said, "Jim, it's going to happen."
Yeah.
Minimum wage is going to happen.
But not vetoing it is different from endorsing it, which he does, which the president does.
I agree with you. But let me tell you something, Joan. He's never endorsed it before now.
Right.
It's because of the election in his last 2 years. He's working on his legacy. It's something that he feels that he needs to do as part of his legacy. Because otherwise, it makes no sense. It's totally at odds with everything he's ever said for 6 years.
Well, that's why it just seems like it would be an odd legacy for him to leave.
I know.
Goes back.
I'm scratching my head too, but I'm telling you, it's going to happen. He also says, Bernanke also says, overall inflation has fallen. In large part, as a result of the decline in the price of crude oil, so he's happy about inflation. He says the incoming data has supported the view that the current stance of policy, meaning where they are on interest rates, is likely to foster sustainable economic growth and a gradual ebbing of core inflation. Now, what he means there, Joan, I think, is we're pretty happy with how we've handled things so far.
Right, and I think, at least in the papers, their interpretation was Mr. Bernanke is saying that we're not changing our stance from, we're going to continue to worry more about inflation than about the health of the economy because we see the health of the economy is good. But he gave no sign that he thought things were overheating and that he would need to raise interest rates to dampen inflation.
And all throughout his speech, he spent a lot of time talking about consumer spending. He spent a lot of time talking about housing, Joan, a lot of time on housing. And the essence of his housing was, yes, it's down, but it's not anything we can't handle. And he actually indicated it was improving a little bit.
Well, I've got a question for you after the break.
After the break, we'll come back, and Joan's going to ask me a question. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, I'll have an excellent answer. 29 after, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, frequently wrong but never in doubt. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
He's done it again, folks.
Oh, no, not again. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the third year in a row.
It's not the first time. It won't be the last.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, and I'm glad you're here. You just tuned in. Welcome aboard. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. And Jonah Pride and I are talking. By the way, Jonah is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And we're talking about right now, we're going to get into the letter in a second. We've been talking about Mr. Bernanke's, the Fed chairman's report to Congress. Jonah, I got a couple more comments about that to make, but before I do that, you had a question you wanted to ask me.
Well, before the break, we talked about how the chairman does not feel he needs to. It sounds as if he doesn't feel the need to raise interest rates anytime soon.
Right.
Do you think he will be able to see his way clear to maybe lower interest rates in the next few months? Do you see any hint of that?
Well, I didn't see anything that hinted of that in his speech.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, folks, I did read the speech, and that's proof positive that I have no life. But but Joan, I don't know if you remember, but I predicted that they would in the second half of the year.
Right. But, I mean, are you feeling better about your prediction or worse?
I feel better
what?
About – yes, I do feel better about my prediction because I if he saw – if Bernanke saw –
That's Mr. Bernanke to you,
you
know.
That's right. Mr. Bernanke, you call him Ben. But if Mr. Bernanke saw an opportunity to do that, he wouldn't telegraph it that far in advance. He would still hold that close to his vest, I think. And I think it would probably be a little softening of the economy for him to lower it very much. Because, you know, I think he thinks inflation is going to stay, you know, kind of enough where they, if they lower it at all, it'll be a quarter of a point. But that was my prediction, was that they would lower it a quarter point in the second half of the year.
Right.
So I didn't see anything.
Which isn't much, you know, one quarter point reduction
right.
in a whole year.
But that's a big statement, though, Joan. That's that just the movement is a big statement for them.
True.
Yeah. So no, I didn't see anything that caused me to believe, other than the fact that it was a lot of good news and he didn't. There was no hand wringing at all.
Yes.
And so I think that's an indication to me that it's possible. It's a possibility he could lower rates. Now let me read one other quick thing for you.
Sure.
He says, the business sector remains in excellent financial condition with strong growth and profits, liquid balance sheets. That's so good news.
Oh, yeah.
Liquid balance sheets. And corporate leverage near historic lows, meaning corporations are not in as much debt. They've got a lot of cash.
That's
and not
good.
As much debt. That's really good.
Very good.
Notably, investment in high-tech equipment rose 9% in 2006. Joan, when he says that high-tech equipment rose 9% in 2006, and now we're seeing an increase in productivity. It's absolutely, Joan, a result of that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I can see that.
It's cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
Over the coming year, he says, capital spending is poised to expand at a moderate pace, supported by steady gains in business output and favorable financial conditions. And he says, overall, the U.S. economy seems likely to expand, Joan, at a moderate pace this year and next.
Well, and one of the things I think you're pointing out is that that marathon consumer we always talk about is getting a little help from the business side.
That's right.
Which hadn't been giving the consumer help for several years during the expansion.
We went through the early 2002 and 2003.
Right.
It was tough, and that's exactly right. And see, and Joan, the other thing that's happened is the because of their of there was so much pent up demand for opportunity for pricing. Strength in pricing and all that. That's what's given us a little bit of a roller coaster in 2004 and 2005 and part of 2006. And so now I think we're just settling down into a really darn good area. And one of the reasons, Joan, is because oil has been kind of stabilized, which is the first thing that you guys talked about this week.
Right. And as you remember, there was a period where we worried that oil was going to go through the roof, you know, 70, 80, what the sky was the limit.
77 or something.
Right. And things now seem to be coming back down to earth a little bit, at least. I'm still a little upset that we're cheering $2 a gallon oil, but that's right. The way life is now.
But you guys point out that the average is still going to be, even though it went down below 60 towards 50, almost to 50, you guys say it's going to actually wind up being in the $60 a barrel range.
Right, averaging 60. So while we're not going to see $4 gasoline, we probably won't see $1.50 gasoline either.
Right, right. And when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the reasons why petroleum is where it is. And folks, all these things are all this is information that helps me plan for the rest of my year, and hopefully it's doing the same thing for you. 20 till, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Prine and I will be right back. In the meantime, here's the Stones to take us out. Jim Blassingame, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pryde is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, you got a website there, kiplinger.com. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah, oh boy, it sure is. You should check it out.
Gets better all the time, and that you can subscribe to their publications, folks, there. Of course, we work out of the Kiplinger Letter, the flagship weekly publication that they send out by email and by they have an attachment to an email and also by hard copy. And then they have the three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And then there's a magazine, Joan, that you can get on the newsstands or by subscription.
That's right. It's Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And I bet there's a phone number rolling around there somewhere, isn't there, Joan?
I would think so. And even better, it's toll-free. It's 800-544-0155.
We'd expect nothing less from Kiplinger. And they still got a 30-day free trial, too, folks. So check that out when you get a chance. Joan, why is oil stabilizing? You guys have talked about some factors this week.
That's right. Well, one of the really great factors is that those speculators that you and I have complained about are backing off. Yes, yes, that helps a lot. And you'll like this one. Winter is acting like winter.
Hey, wait a minute. I thought it was global warming, Joan.
Right.
So, that's one thing. So, but winter is finally acting like winter. What is it? I'm not sure I'm understanding the... how that impacts I know that
well,
earlier
we're making the point that not only is oil not going to spike up anymore, it's not going to tumble either.
Ah, that's and making it stabilize.
The speculators were causing the spikes, and the warm winter where it's causing the tumbles.
Hey, earlier so, on, when we had some of the warm winter, and it looked like things were that was one of the things that kind of contributed. The demand was down. That was
right,
one of the
exactly.
things that caused the price to come down, wasn't it?
Right, and so we were on a roller coaster ride with oil for a while there.
Right, right. But you guys also, they say that oil prices are not going to go a lot lower. We're going to be sticking with
right.
around $60.
Right.
There is still lots of global demand, isn't there, Joan?
Well, exactly. And we still can't get enough oil. But if you subtract then the speculators, you get a little bit more even demand there.
And, of course, we've got the OPEC is not going to let prices go down too low. They're going to step in and do their part to hold the prices up.
Right, and I guess there was some talk that Saudi Arabia might try to bring the price down some more, but we don't think that's going to happen.
Also, I read something the other day about the strategic petroleum reserves for the U.S., that they're going to try to beef those up a little bit, just in case there's some kind of a nightmare scenario in the Middle East.
Not just beef it up, but double the amount in the petroleum reserve. I guess we must have about 750 million barrels now, because this says that we want it to be 1.5 billion by 2027.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask somebody, Joan, about, I want to ask somebody if how they're rotating that. You know, because gasoline gets bad. Is it petroleum reserves? Is it crude oil or is it gasoline, Joan?
Oh gosh.
I guess it's crude oil that they're storing there. I guess, and maybe that doesn't go bad. I know gasoline.
Well, we use the word petroleum. I mean, the name of it is the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. So yeah. I don't know what form it takes.
I don't know. I need to know that information, Joan. Would you find that out for me?
Sure, anytime.
Joan, let's move over and talk about some financial services stuff.
All right.
One of the things you guys talk about is what you call a bumper crop of fledgling community banks.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, and we think that's good news. We think that there's going to be a 20% increase in small community banks. And I know you and I have talked about this for small business owners. You know, big banks have a lot of services. They can do a lot of good things for you. But if you're looking for financing, don't forget the banker down the street, the small community banker, because he or she may know your situation and your needs and certainly the community better than the big bank.
Well, Joan, my standard rule of thumb, the blasting game rule of thumb for banking for small business, is that every small business
is that copyrighted?
That's
or patented?
That's in the Library of Congress, Joan.
Okay.
And it's in the book. Is that every small business should have at least two banking relationships, two different
right.
banks, and one of them must be an independent community bank.
Makes sense to me.
If you're going to be a successful, yeah. now you can. I think you ought to do business with the big banks. I think you ought to have a relationship with a big bank. But I.
But
think
why that, is that?
Why is what? Which
why
one?
Why have a relationship with a big bank?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, if your business has a chance to grow one day, Joan.
Yeah.
At one point in time, you're going to outgrow that independent community bank.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah, that can only take you so far.
Right.
You need to be able, you need to, if you've got a business that could become a lot, you know, over in 10 years, let's say, your business could grow significantly.
Right.
And you could literally outgrow that community bank, depending on how small the community bank is. And so you need to have two different relationships. You need to have more than one relationship for obvious reasons, but it's one of the big ones being that whenever you need your banker the most, that's typically when they get promoted or they get run over by a truck or they quit or they, you know, decide to go be a monk somewhere or whatever. And so you've got to have two people who know your story.
Right.
So they can help you when you need help. So I'd recommend, you know, go ahead and have one relationship with a big bank, a national, regional, large regional or something like that. But absolutely, positively, do not fail as a small business owner to have one relationship, minimum, maybe even your lead relationship, with an independent community bank.
Makes sense.
And I like it that you guys reported that there are fledgling community banks being created out there. That's good news for small business. It's good news for everybody.
That's right.
Almost 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. We'll be right back with Joan. Stay with us.
This ain't no place for losers, or the innocent, or the blind.
It's 7 till the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, I want to come back to this banking thing for just a minute. We're talking about what you guys reported that that there was going to be a bumper crop of fledgling community banks. Now, what that means is that there are a lot of community banks being started. Brand spanking new banks. And if it's interesting, Joan, to watch what happens in the banking industry. Remember the barbell effect that Mike, our friend Mike Menzies, explained to us?
Sure. We talked about it a lot, that the kind of the middle range banks would disappear.
Well, what happens is the big banks are on the one end of the barbell, and the community banks, independent community banks, are on the other end of the barbell. And they're both those two groups are quite prolific and healthy. And in the middle where the handle is, that's kind of the middle-sized banks, as you said a second ago.
Right.
And they're being as they grow, you know, what they're doing is they're buying up, the middle banks are buying up more mature independent community banks and rolling them up and aggregating them to then be rolled up and consumed by a larger bank, the national. So that makes the one end of the barbell bigger, but it makes the small bank end of the barbell smaller until we have more fledgling independent community banks.
Right, and that now we're seeing that, or we're going to be seeing that this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so small business owners, don't be reticent to do business with independent community bank. In fact, if I were a small business and I saw a little trailer, you know how those, that's what happens, Joe. Independent community banks usually pop up in little trailers. They can actually buy a trailer, a manufactured product that's got a safe in it and everything. It's already made up for them. And most of them, no, really, they start out that way.
Wow.
They start out in trailers.
I did not know that.
Oftentimes they do. So if I saw a bank opening up today, I would go down and open an account with them. I'd go meet them. You'd be able to walk right into the president's office. You'd be able to walk right in there, introduce yourself, tell them you're a small business owner.
Right.
And open an account with them. Don't ask them to borrow any money. They'll ask you if they can loan you money.
Sure.
Joan, because they need the loans.
That's how they make money, sure.
But the first thing you do, folks, is go open an account with them and meet the president, get to know them, buy a little of their stock.
Establish that relationship.
Exactly. Buy a little of their stock. And then I promise you, Joan, you can write this on a rock. I promise you, if you open an account in a small startup independent community bank, within, if not the moment that you are there to open that account, within 2 weeks, somebody will contact you and ask you to loan you some money.
Wow. That's a good deal.
So check it out, folks. I'm really glad, Joan, that you pointed this out. This is good news because we need those new community banks to replace the ones that get absorbed in the roll-up process, the consolidation.
Right.
Joan, what about the reverse merger thing? What's that all about?
I have trouble getting my mind around this. If you're a growing company and you'd like to go public with an IPO and an initial public offering, there's an alternative. You could merge with a public company that's actually a shell, a company that's not really running operations but is filing paperwork with the SEC. And it's cheaper to do and it's quicker to do.
There are people out there, Joan, and I've been involved in one of these before.
Really? Okay.
There are people out there who are creating these shells.
Yeah.
And that's all they are, is they create them so somebody would come in and acquire them. And they've already gone through the initial process and all that. And it's almost like a ready-made package for you.
So you don't have the paperwork burden, I guess.
That's right. And so it's a reverse merger, meaning that the private company acquires the public company instead of the other way around.
Oh, I see. Right. Right.
And then you can rename it. You don't have to call it what the original name was. You can rename it, and then you start trading publicly. You know, you have to start out, you know, early on you have to start out on the pink sheets and the small caps.
Right.
But then you can grow. It's definitely a way to consider growing and going public.
Wow.
Something to look at. Check with your securities attorney about that, folks.
Yes.
Hey, Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
And we'll see you next time.
I'll be back.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and I want to remind you, ladies and gentlemen, that this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.